You're listening to The Vitals, a bi-monthly podcast for all things oncology nursing. For even more content, check out oncologynursingnews.com or find Oncology Nursing News on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or LinkedIn. Hi everyone, this is Lindsay Fisher, Associate Editor at Oncology Nursing News. In this episode of The Vitals, Milagros Elia highlights how oncology nurses play a role in ongoing conversations regarding the intersection of climate change and public health. She recently presented on climate change as part of the 2022 Oncology Nursing Society Bridge. In a recap interview with Oncology Nursing News, she discusses how increases in heat and poor air quality can negatively affect vulnerable populations and the role that oncology nurses play in proactively managing their patients' health in the context of changing local climates.
My name is Milagros Elia. I have a master's degree in advanced practice nursing. I'm an APRN and a board certified adult nurse practitioner.
And how did you first get involved in this and interested in this topic?
It really stems from environmental justice. I've always had an interest in environmental justice simply because I was born into a marginalized, under-resourced community. But it didn't really evolve into climate and health until the pandemic hit in 2020. I became very drawn into the three main things that were happening in 2020 between social justice, the pandemic, and just the communities that were being impacted by COVID. And I'm certainly not the first one to talk about this. Many other oncology nurses have come before me and paved the way, leaving research and literature. But I decided to take what they had already created and bring it together in a way that could be presented to the greater organization and say, look at what we've learned from the pandemic, from lockdown, from what has happened to our patients. And so I was very fortunate prior to the pandemic of connecting with Alex Stone. And I came to him, I emailed him and said, Alec, what is the position statement? What position statement does ONS have regarding climate and health, climate change and the impact on our patients? And he said, none. Why do you ask? I said, oh, gee, well, Alec, we got a lot to talk about. He goes, you know, it's funny. He said, you're not the first person to bring this up. And I said, well, my gosh, I wouldn't imagine I would be. I mean, I'm not the biggest brain in the universe here. So, you know, we got to talking and he said, I'm going to include the others who have brought this to my attention before you. And maybe we could have a powwow about this. We can talk about this. And so we did. And that was the first meeting that generated a community. It generated webinar, very well attended webinar events. So I think the greater oncology community of the oncology nurse community has been thinking about this. This is a timely topic that is on a lot of people's minds for various reasons. So it just came together at the right time in history.
Finding out that other nurses have come before you asking these questions is really interesting.
Yes.
And so,
very much so.
Moving on a little bit, and you've already started answering this question, but could you provide some context as to the relationship between climate change and public health?
Yes. You know, many organizations have stated this, but I'm going to refer to the World Health Organization, who has been very outspoken about stating that climate change is the single biggest health threat facing humanity today. And so we know that climate change is damaging human health today and will even have a greater impact in the future. These health consequences will inevitably harm some more than others. So here's where we start looking at that whole environmental justice and health inequities piece. Disproportionately affected will be the most vulnerable and most marginalized populations. And this impact is going to increase in intensity over time. So what's bad now will be worse tomorrow. So for oncology nurses, it's critical to understand when we're looking at our patients, who among our patients, who among our communities are at the greatest risk and why? What makes them so vulnerable and through what pathways? So here we're leaning into our nursing science. Now, looking at the literature, according to publications by, for example, Lancet, Countdown on Health and Climate, climate events have the potential for one to disrupt core public health infrastructures and overwhelm health services. We know that hospitals, health centers, and health workers are the first responders. We're at the first, at the front lines when it comes to the health effects of climate change. And health systems will invariably bear high costs resulting from the growing numbers of extreme climate events that we've been seeing already in a very short amount of time. And so we as healthcare clinicians, as part of our healthcare systems, must find ways to become resilient in the face of these climate impacts. So some of the poorest health systems in this country are often some of the most vulnerable in harm's way and without any tools or resources to protect themselves. This is a very quick side story, but one of the things I became heavily involved with at the beginning of the pandemic was and I'm using this as an example, the Navajo Nation in Arizona. I am the first to admit how ignorant I was living in 2020 in this day and age and not realizing that there was an entire population in our country that was living the way that they have historically been living below the poverty level. They have one cancer center, which I've become fairly friendly with their leadership, Tuba City Regional. They have one cancer center that they just built a couple of years prior to the pandemic to
Oh my
treat over
gosh.
200,000 persons on their reservation.
Wow.
No, very little roadways, hardly any cars. You have a small area that with one, maybe two cars available that the community shares, no internet support. I mean, I could go on and on and on, but they were being decimated at the beginning of the pandemic from injustices that had happened long before and had been maintained. So I reached out as an oncology nurse to that one cancer center and worked with them in the little ways that I could to help to support the cancer patients there. So they have very little indoor running water systems. Most homes don't have indoor water. They are very vulnerable to heat stress. I could go on and on, but that's an example that I wanted to share about a vulnerable population. And then again, you have areas that are more citified and not on the Navajo Nation, but places like Louisiana, where we have Cancer Alley. And the patients there are so vulnerable because there's such an elevated incidence of cancer in those areas. So, anyway, this is a huge, at the heart of any environmental justice or climate change conversations, we must look at the center of that, which is environmental injustice. And what is it my daughter always tells me? A chain is only as strong as its weakest link. So we must support the weakest link. And in this case, that means the most vulnerable populations. And so what are the exposure pathways that make them so vulnerable in terms of climate change? So injury and mortality from extreme weather events, heat-related illnesses. So our patients, the very old, the very young, and those that are experiencing, setbacks because of treatment or where they are in their cancer journey are at increased risk of heat stroke. Respiratory illnesses and difficulty managing those symptoms of chronic respiratory conditions, like with our lung cancer patients. Because of areas where there are flooding, we have to be cognizant of contaminated drinking water, because our soils can go from droughts to that compact the soil to heavy, sudden heavy floodings, and the soils can no longer absorb that water. So that's where we get our flooding. The waters become contaminated. We see an increase in vector-borne diseases, food insecurity, access to care, and a growing concern for the mental and psychosocial health impacts as well. So in the short to medium term, the health impacts of climate change are going to be determined mainly, as I've been going on about, the vulnerability of our populations and their resilience. How much resilience do they already have built into the current rate of climate change? And to what extent and pace of attempts at adaptation? In the longer term, effects will increasingly depend on the extent to what action is taken now to reduce emissions and avoid dangerous temperature thresholds and potential irreversible tipping points, which we are coming rapidly up against. So people of color, low-income communities are traditionally experience systematically higher exposure to health-threatening climate conditions, like what we talked about. And out of these climate threats, the biggest one we're dealing with here in the United States and globally is heat. And so that heat is, it can take lives and affect health in a multitude of ways by itself, in prolonged heat waves of extremely unprecedented temperatures, and also in combination with other factors. So you combine high heat in an area that's been receiving floods, and you're going to see, those vector-borne diseases and mold and fungus coming into our patients' homes and in their outdoor environments. Over the last 10 years, we have experienced more frequent and longer heat waves. This summer is the coolest summer we will have, has been the coolest summer that we will have moving forward. And that's a little bit scary to think. As nurses, we realize that extreme heat can take a toll on the body and the increase of the risk of heat-related illnesses and hospitalizations. Climate change is likely to affect cancer control actions all along the cancer continuum, from areas of exposure, etiology, and modifying behaviors for prevention and early detection, all the way through detection, diagnosis, and treatment and survivorship. So, because climate change does increase our exposure to things like air pollution, ultraviolet radiation, and disruptions within our food supply, water quality, and quantity, and we are looking at increased infections. So, once we have an understanding that we're dealing with these climate-related events, then we move along to prevention. And when you have things like disruption in food supply, disruption in access to clean water and quantities of food and water, then our prevention recommendations, like healthy diet, can invariably be impacted in some of those vulnerable populations we spoke about. When you're talking about heat waves and the increasing impact of ultraviolet radiation, but we're saying with a smile on our face, science says physical activity is the best thing for you in prevention and even during treatment. Well, if you live in a cement city and very little green space, and you're having a heat wave, how are you going to get that physical activity?
Right.
You are going to see that impact begin to impact our communities. Sun protection, how do we best advise now in this new era of extreme exposure? And then we look into detection, diagnosis, and treatment. And we start to see disruptions in the process of screening, like we saw diagnosis and treatment, like we saw with COVID when we went on lockdown. And the ability of healthcare systems to sustain this. And how do we allow for the continuation of care when we have an area that has been flooded or wildfires and access has been, now we have barriers to access. There are trees down, there are lines down. Patients don't have access to their home care coming in. We don't have universal structures in place to get around that. We're living with this. We're building this plane as we're flying it. So this is increasingly calling for us to consider not just mitigation, of course mitigation, but also adaptation in the form of emergency preparedness in response to these increasing natural disasters or chronic ongoing climate events like, you know, air pollution. So it's vital that we consider that all through the cancer care continuum.
Right. And so to shift gears a little bit, and thank you so much for a really great responses as to the relationship. As an oncology nurse, how can you get involved in advocating for environmental justice and policies to help combat climate change? What steps can you take on an individual level, and what impact can you try and inspire?
I'm a huge advocate for advocates. I don't know if that's such a thing, but so I mean, we know that nurses are the number one trusted profession, and so we are so well positioned to connect the dots with our patients and our communities and our family members, and to really make it make sense for them. How does the impact of their local environment, and by extension, climate change, what impact does that have to their health and well-being? And so our professional duties require that we assess and address our patients, their symptoms in clinical practice. And we have got to, we always have provided them with resources to meet their needs. Now we need to look at expanding what those needs are. What resources can we make available to them that is specific to their treatment, to their symptomology, in light of things of like air pollution, let's say. We have to have some advice. We can't just put our hands to our hearts and nod with sympathy and say, oh, I know, that must be tough. We can't do that anymore. So looking at resources like a multitude of free apps that we can advise our patients if our patients are having increased chronic respiratory symptoms. We can talk to them about governmental apps that have been developed to look at air quality that are free, that they can, because we always want to empower our patients. So give them the information, explain the potential connection between the last 10 patients you saw who happened to be coming in with this increased complaint of respiratory distress and the fact that the air quality from, you know, the neighboring state that's having major wildfires has been presenting itself, and this may be impactful. And so give them the tool to make that connection for them, and give them the tool. Empower them with self-efficacy and say, this tool can help you see what the air quality is like today. Look at the week and the days to follow. Plan your outdoor appointments around this. And the next time you come to clinic, let's talk about that, right? We're using the nursing process. Evaluate it. Evaluate what worked for them, what didn't. You have patients undergoing chemotherapy. They're extra sensitive to the sun. They need extra protection. You tell them about the EPA's UV index. I think it's called Sunwise, another free app. What time of day is the best for them to plan their outdoor activities? Well, in both cases, it's going to be earlier in the morning, but you want to enable them with the tools that they need and keep the conversation open. Climate change is not going to be the topic that your patients necessarily are open to talking about. So it's not your job, or it's not, it's actually not right to sit there and try to convince them that all of these new symptoms are all because of climate change and they should become an advocate and go, no, 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 no. That's not what we're here for. We're here to support them. You don't need to use the words climate change with them unless they're open to that conversation. What you need to do is you need to address the symptoms and make the connection to their environment so that it makes sense to them, and then give them the tools to help them deal with those symptoms. We take their lead. Clinicians like nurses can play a strong role in efforts to mitigate healthcare systems through advocating for reduction in their own institution's carbon footprint. Advocate for transitioning to clean, renewable energy and building climate-resilient facilities. Health professions like nurses have a tremendous opportunity to protect their patients from the impact of climate change by working to create sustainable, climate-smart hospitals and healthcare systems. Nurses are not traditionally thought of as really having a place at the table when it comes to talking about environmental health, or how, or the impact their hospital is having on in terms of contributing to carbon emissions. We're not traditionally thought of that. So in terms of advocating, we can advocate for each other by promoting public understanding of our roles. In the case of climate change and environmental health, we need to amplify each other's voices and support each other getting to the table. Those nurses in power in nursing leadership increasingly have a duty to, what they say, sponsor. Speak the name of a nurse that you know is in your staff, in your facility, that is knowledgeable in these areas. Speak their names in the rooms that they are not in and ask that they be called to the table. And so when we start to amplify each other's voices, we find nurses at the table talking to the supply chain and working creatively and in collaboration with the different aspects that we know are increasing carbon emissions, like dietary. What does that nurse who is self-educated, or even educated through schooling, because now more and more schools are offering this, What does she know about that critical connection between health and the climate and the environment that she can speak to about why we should look towards hospitals increasingly going towards a plant-based diet? Yeah, okay, it's good for the heart, but what about climate change? Why does that matter? Why should our transport systems be increasingly transitioned for electric vehicles? That nurse knows something and makes a connection that perhaps other people at that table don't know. And so we need to amplify each other. We need to pull each other up. We need to be out there sharing each other's posts and articles and lifting each other up. Because if we don't band together, we will never as a profession be called to the table.
Thank you for listening to this episode of The Vitals. Be sure to never miss a beat with Oncology Nursing News.